Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again, and welcome back to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. We come to you 7 days a week from the Voice of America in Washington, with interesting and important stories from around the world. We always present these stories at a slower speed. We speak more slowly than normal English speakers do, and we use a limited vocabulary. That means we try to use words that are easy to understand if English is not your first language. Today we have two stories for you. The first one is about a huge oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The company that caused the spill 5 years ago has paid a large amount of money to help fix the mess they caused. We will tell you how the money is being spent and how the spill has affected people's lives. Then some technology news about the Internet. A recent report says it is speeding up in many places around the world. Okay, are you ready? It's time to listen and learn and hear about our world as it is on VOA. Here is part one. 5 years ago, work crews successfully stopped a major oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The workers blocked the release of oil from a well that had been leaking for 87 days. The oil spill polluted major fishing areas, estuaries, and beaches along the Gulf Coast of the southeastern United States. Earlier this month, the company judged responsible, British Petroleum, agreed to pay $18.7 billion to coastal states. That money will help pay for environmental and economic restoration efforts. But a full recovery could still take many more years. About 70% of the shrimp Americans eat has traditionally come from the Gulf of Mexico. But large areas of the Gulf were closed to fishing after the oil spill, and seafood businesses had to look to other areas for shrimp. Coastal fishing areas are now open, but the owner of Blanchard Seafood, a seafood company, says many of his former buyers never came back. Owner Dean Blanchard says his business is probably losing $20 million a year in sales. Mr. Blanchard said he is still angry at BP. He says oil companies in general do not seem interested in caring for their equipment in the Gulf. He says the companies only think about profits and do not care about the environment. Port Fouchon has one of the largest oil and gas operation centers in the United States. It is just a short drive from Dean Blanchard's business on Grand Isle. While the energy industry has had a clear effect on Louisiana's natural areas, it is the most important provider of jobs in the state. Oil refineries and storage centers line the Mississippi River in the state capital, Baton Rouge. Kyle Graham is head of Louisiana's Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority.
If you look at the permits that are issued for oil and gas activities in the near shore, the ones that the state issues, they now require mitigation activities and for all of the fill material to be beneficially utilized.
Mr. Graham says the state's share of the BP settlement money will give Louisiana the ability to fix some problems.
As we continue to learn about the effects of this spill, there's money there that we would be able to utilize to come up with a restoration action.
Visitors are returning to the sunny Louisiana coast to fish and swim in the Gulf waters. But there are many effects from the BP oil spill that can only be seen through careful research. Many studies have found oil and other chemicals on the sea floor of the Gulf and in the shells and bodies of different kinds of aquatic animals. There are different opinions on how serious the problem is, but Kyle Graham says a full recovery will require more studies and more work. You are listening to The Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. A new report says internet speeds around the world are getting much faster. The report comes from Akamai, a business that provides cloud computing services. But it warns that the sharp increase in the number of devices connected to the World Wide Web could cause problems. The company says this increase might use up all of the remaining space that is currently available on the Internet. The report is called State of the Internet. It examines use of the World Wide Web, Internet, and mobile device data speeds and overall strength of the web. Akamai releases a new version of the report every 3 months at the end of each financial quarter. David Belson is the company's senior director of industry and data intelligence. The changes this quarter were overwhelmingly positive, he said. Given that this report tracks the same trends we've been seeing for a while, I think that's a very positive sign. The report says internet connectivity continues to grow in every part of the world. The total number of internet users has reached nearly 3.2 billion. There are almost two connected devices for every person on the planet. The report predicts that number will increase to three devices per person by 2019. The report says that worldwide, average connection speeds rose by 10% over last year. The international average is now almost 5 megabits per second. South Korea set a new record with an average speed of 23.6 megabits. Ireland, Hong Kong, Sweden, and the Netherlands were among the top five areas with the fastest connections. However, less than 5% of the world's population has access or use of internet speeds of 25 megabits or higher. The United States still leads the world in the number of unique or different internet addresses. The report says the growth in the number of connected devices is adding to a new problem, the need for more addresses. Most of the World Wide Web uses Internet Protocol Version 4 to govern data traffic. IPv4 has a total of 4.29 billion unique addresses for computers, computer tablets, and other electronic devices to connect and direct traffic. But billions of addresses are already being used. Experts use the term Internet of Things for all the physical objects that are able to connect to the Internet. Researchers are warning that as the Internet of Things grows, IPv4 will not have enough room in the near future. The IPv4 exhaustion issue has been around for many years, Mr. Belson told VOA. Now it's really becoming more and more imminent. There is a new version of the web called IPv6. It has been available for more than 10 years. The problem, Mr. Belson said, is that internet service providers do not see IPv4 exhaustion as an immediate threat. If they did, they would change to the new system. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America. We are coming to you from Washington.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. Mosquitoes have an extraordinary ability to target humans far away and fly straight to their unprotected skin. Regrettably, mosquitoes can do more than cause an itchy wound. Some mosquitoes spread several serious diseases, including dengue, yellow fever, and malaria. Over 1 million people worldwide die from these mosquito-borne diseases each year. Mosquitoes need blood to survive. They are attracted to human skin and breath. They smell the carbon dioxide gas, which all mammals breathe out. This gas is how mosquitoes know that a warm-blooded creature is nearby. But mosquitoes also use their eyes and sense of touch. Michael Dickerson is a professor at the California Institute of Technology. His research shows how these small insects with even smaller brains use three senses to find a blood meal. Michael Dickerson's team used plumes, material that rises into the air of carbon dioxide gas into a wind tunnel. They then used cameras to record the mosquitoes. The insects followed the plume. Then the scientists placed dark objects on the lighter-colored floor and walls of the tunnel. Mr. Dickerson said at first the mosquitoes showed no interest in the objects at all.
What was quite striking and quite surprising is that the mosquitoes fly back and forth for hours. These are hungry females, and they completely ignore the objects on the floor and wall of the tunnel. But the moment they get a hit of CO2, they change their behavior quite dramatically and now would become attracted to these little visual blobs.
This suggested to the researchers that a mosquito's sense of smell is more important in the search for food. Once mosquitoes catch a smell of a human or animal, they also follow visual cues.
This really makes a lot of sense, because if the mosquitoes were distracted by every visual object in their world, they would just waste all their time. In this case, they only start paying attention when their nose tells them that there might be a host nearby.
This process happens several times over the course of a mosquito's flight.
What some of the details of our experiments indicated is that it's very hard to fool them over the long run. They will always get their man or woman over time, because they'll just keep repeating this strategy until they find a yummy meal.
Matt DiGennaro is a scientist at Florida International University. He says understanding a mosquito's way of finding its host could help prevent those insects from biting. He is working to create genetic changes that affect the mosquito's sense of smell. I'm Marcia James.
Music.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Generations of school children have been taught that Christopher Columbus discovered the New World. In fact, the second Monday in October is celebrated as a national holiday, Columbus Day, to honor the European explorer. But October's page on the calendar also has a lesser-known observance. October 9th is Leif Erikson Day. Leif Erikson was a Norse explorer who sailed around the northeastern coast of what we now call North America about 1,000 years ago. He and his crew returned to Greenland with news of a place he called Vinland. Following his explorations, a few settlements were built. Experts digging in eastern Canada in the 1960s found the remains of a village with houses like those in Greenland, Iceland, and Norway. But the Norse did not establish any permanent settlements in North America. Today, as we relaunch our series, we begin with the story of early European explorers in North America. In the 11th century, Europe was beginning a period of great change. One reason was the religious wars known as the Crusades. These were military campaigns by Christians to force Muslims out of the Holy Land in the Middle East. The Crusades began at the end of the 11th century. They continued for about 200 years. One effect of the presence of European armies in the Middle East was to increase trade. This trade was controlled by businessmen in Venice and other city-states in Italy. The businessmen earned large profits by supplying the warring armies and by bringing goods from the East into Europe. When the European crusaders returned home, they brought with them some new and useful products. These included spices, perfumes, silk cloth, and steel products. These goods became highly valued all over Europe. The increased trade with the East led to the creation and growth of towns along the supply roads. It also created a large number of rich European businessmen. The European nations were growing. They developed armies and governments. These had to be paid for with taxes collected from the people. By the 15th century, European countries were ready to explore new parts of the world. The first explorers were the Portuguese. By 1400, they wanted to control the eastern spice trade. European businessmen did not want to continue paying Venetian and Arab traders for their costly spices. They wanted to set up trade themselves. If they could sail to Asia directly for these products, the resulting trade would bring huge profits. The leader of Portugal's exploration efforts was Prince Henry, a son of King John I. He was interested in sea travel and exploration. He became known as Henry the Navigator. Prince Henry brought experts to his country and studied the sciences involved in exploration. He built an observatory to study the stars. Portuguese sea captains sailed their ships down the west coast of Africa, hoping to find a path to India and East Asia. they finally found the end of the African continent, the area called the Cape of Good Hope. It took the Portuguese only about 50 years to take control of the spice trade. They established trading colonies in Africa, the Persian Gulf, India, and China. Improvements in technology helped them succeed. One improvement was a new kind of ship. It could sail more easily through storms and winds. Other inventions, like the compass, allowed them to sail out of sight of land. The Portuguese also armed their ships with modern cannon. They used these weapons to battle Muslim and East Asian traders. The other European nations would not let Portugal control this spice trade for long, however. Spain's Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand agreed to provide ships, crew, and supplies for an exploration by an Italian named Christopher Columbus. Columbus thought the shortest way to reach the East was to sail west across the Atlantic Ocean. He was right, but he also was wrong. He believed the world was much smaller than it is. He did not imagine the existence of another continent and another huge ocean between Europe and East Asia. Columbus and a crew of 88 men left Spain on August 3, 1492, in three ships, the Niña, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. By October 12, the sailors stood on land again on an island that Columbus named San Salvador. He explored the island and the nearby islands of what are now known as Cuba and Hispaniola. He believed they were part of the coast of East Asia, which was then called the Indies. He called the people he found there Indians. Columbus left about 40 men on San Salvador Island to build a fort from the wood of one of the ships. He returned to Spain with birds, plants, gold, and people captured from the land he explored. Columbus was welcomed as a hero when he returned to Spain in March of 1493. Columbus sailed again across the Atlantic to the Caribbean 5 months later. He found that the fort built by his men had been destroyed by fire. Columbus did not find any of his men. But this time, he had many more men and all the animals and equipment needed to start a colony on Hispaniola. 7 months later, he sent five ships back to Spain. They carried Indians to be sold as slaves. Columbus himself also returned to Spain. Columbus made another trip in 1498. This time, he saw the coast of South America. But the settlers on Hispaniola were so unhappy with conditions in their new colony, they sent Columbus back to Spain as a prisoner. Spain's rulers pardoned him. In 1502, Columbus made his final voyage to what some by then were calling the New World. He stayed on the island of Jamaica until he returned home 2 years later. During all his trips, Columbus explored islands and waterways, searching for that passage to the Indies. He never found it, nor did he find spices, or great amounts of gold. Yet he always believed that he had found the Indies. He refused to recognize that it really was a new world. Evidence of this was all around him. Strange plants, unknown in either Europe or Asia, and a different people who did not understand any language spoken in the East. Columbus's voyages, however, opened up the New World. Others later explored all of North America. Now, you may be wondering about the name of this new land. If Christopher Columbus led the explorations, then why is it called America? The answer lies with the name of another Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. He visited the coast of South America in 1499. He wrote stories about his experiences that were widely read in Europe. In 1507, a German mapmaker, Martin Waldseemüller, read Vespucci's stories. He decided that the writer had discovered the New World and thought it should be called America in his honor. And so it was. Spanish explorers sought to find gold and power in the New World. They also wanted to spread Christianity, which they considered the only true religion. The first of these Spanish explorers was Juan Ponce de León. He landed in North America in 1513. He explored the eastern coast of what is now the state of Florida. He was searching for a special kind of water that Europeans believed existed. They believed that this water could make old people young again. Ponce de León never did find the Fountain of Youth. Also in 1513, Vasco Núñez de Balboa crossed the Isthmus of Panama and reached the Pacific Ocean. In 1519, Hernán Cortés landed an army in Mexico. His army destroyed the ancient empire of the Aztec Indians. That same year, Ferdinand Magellan began his 3-year voyage around the world. And in the 1530s, the forces of Francisco Pizarro destroyed the Inca Indian Empire in Peru. 10 years later, Francisco Vázquez de Coronado had marched as far north as what is now the American state of Kansas, and then west to the Grand Canyon. About the same time, Hernando de Soto reached the Mississippi River. 50 years after Columbus first landed at San Salvador, Spain claimed a huge area of America. The riches of these new lands made Spain the greatest power in Europe and the world. But other nations refused to accept Spanish claims to the New World. Explorers from England, France, and Holland were also sailing to North America. That will be our story next week. You can read and listen to our series online at voaspecialenglish.com. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.